All right, time to bring in Andy Baggerly. We call him Extra Bags from The Athletic before the Giants and Marlins play some baseball here today, a gorgeous day for baseball. Andy, how are you?
I'm good, Marty. How are you?
Very good, very good. Boy, a lot going on at the ballpark. It's amazing. Every day there's something else. Call-ups, minor league things, home runs. Who knows what's going to happen next? Tyler Biddy, we've got a lot to talk about. Andy, let's start with the River Cats, and you wrote about them. The significance of winning the PCL to the organization, and, of course, the River Cats, the first AAA team of the Giants to do it. Going back to Fresno, I can't believe it, 1977. Your thoughts about that?
Yeah, no, going back before Fresno, Mark, going back to before they were the Phoenix Firebirds to when they were the Phoenix Giants, 1977. It's when Greg Moonman Minton was still in the rotation for them. That's the last time they won the PCL title. And, you know, I made the point in the story, winning the AAA title or a PCL title or an international league title, that's not the best barometer of sort of the health of your system. I mean, these are not generally your top prospects who are playing at AAA. This is sort of your break glass in case of emergency players, your organizational depth. But I think that this shows that Farhan Zaidi has been very, very good at finding that depth, being aggressive at adding that depth. And they had seven starting outfielders when they started the season. And 25 out of 35 players on the Giants' current 40-man roster have spent at least some time with Sacramento this year. They've used 84 players. 47 pitchers, I believe, have recorded an out this year. And so you can't have that amount of subtractions from that roster, have players go down for injuries, all that. And if you're bringing up guys from single A, double A who aren't ready, you know, that's how you end up where the Giants have been for the last 20 years. Last year there were 55 and 85 at Sacramento. So I think it just shows a better attitude, a better organizational depth, and hats off especially to that coaching staff with Dave Brundage to be able to manage, you know, 80-plus guys and keep them all sane and healthy and get them playing time and keep them sharp and keep them obviously in a winning mode because they knocked off the A's and then the Astros, AAA teams, which had the best records in the PCL to earn this. So they certainly earned everything they got.
All right, Andy Baggerly with us. We call him Extra Bags with two G's on Twitter. He writes for The Athletic, and everything Andy writes, you always want to take a look at it. It's really worthwhile. Andy, the other part of the River Cats that I felt was they had fun, and all the guys who are up here, and you're right, most of the River Cats are up here one way or another, they really celebrated the River Cats championship in the AAA PCL championship.
Yeah, they did. I mean, you saw Chris Shaw and Tyler Rogers. They were high-fiving yesterday. Chris Shaw was yelling, hey, how about those kitties? And, you know, I think Chris Shaw said it best, and Tyler Rogers said it best. Shaw said, you know, it's a different mentality because, you know, people had this notion that, hey, if I play and if I play well and perform, I will get a shot at the big league level. I'm not frozen here. And that was true for the people who replaced them as well. So, you know, I think that that went a long way to keeping a positive outlook and a positive sort of chemistry and mentality. And that led to, you know, having a good time and winning games. And so, you know, it's always about talent first and foremost, but there is something in the chemistry too, I think. And the Giants certainly improved on both those scores in a very wide and meaningful way at the AAA level this season.
Boy, a lot of fun, a lot of fun. On the big deal meter, I'm going to give it a big deal. I really think it ignited the clubhouse, and I think it was good. Thank good Dave Brundage, what a great job he did with 87 players. Unbelievable. Andy, you wrote about home runs, and it's really a great topic about what the opposition does, what the Giants do here at Oracle Park, changes in the wind for next year. I thought it was a great column. Let's talk about that.
Sure. Well, you know, I was just looking at what the Giants have done in this ballpark, and we know that, you know, they've got to win, I believe, three out of their last seven games at home to match the 84 team for the worst home record in Giants history, modern franchise history, even going back to New York. So we don't really think about them being that bad because they've got a winning record on the road. You know, you think a team that's bad at home is going to be bad everywhere because you should win more games at home. But, you know, you look at why the Giants have been so bad at home. They've got over 1,000 plate appearances between Posey, Crawford, Longoria, Joe Panik before he was released, and Brandon Crawford, and those guys have combined to hit a dozen homers at home. So, you know, that's a big part of the problem, I think. Then you compare it with the Dodgers, and you have to go in the column and crunch all the numbers that, or look at the numbers that are crunched for you, and what the Dodgers are doing at home, especially over the last five seasons. They're just destroying the baseball there, while their pitchers are giving up more homers, but it's more in line with the league-wide increase. It's not, like a 50% increase like the Dodgers have. And you understand why the Dodgers are almost unbeatable at home, and the Giants just don't really have that that same basis of comparison. So, you know, whether they tweak the dimensions a little bit or just find better personnel that can hit here, it's going to be important that the Giants maybe do both those things to try to even it out and recreate a home field advantage for the way baseball is played these days.
Yeah, they have to hit some home runs here. And they've got some people that can reach the seats. Pilar has shown he can do it. Longoria, he gets an inside pitch, he can turn on it. He can do it. Yastrzemski looks like he can do it. But what do you think is going to happen next year? Do you have an opinion on the bullpens or maybe cutting down Triples Alley? I know every time Belt hits one out there, he gets a second base or he rounds first base if it's caught, and he just shakes his head every time, whether it's a hit or not.
Yeah, you know, I think as much as these guys try mentally to keep a good attitude about it, the park is in their heads and they've been beaten down by it. I think we all kind of recognize that. It's human nature. It's not a failing on their part. But, moving in the fence is not going to be to goose more home runs out of Buster Posey, Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford, et cetera, at home. That's not what it's about. And that's what a lot of fans will say to me. Oh, well, it's just about getting different players. It's not about, you know, trying to get more home runs for Brandon Belt. That's not what moving in the fences would be about. It would be more about making the park less of an outlier to the point where maybe it's become disadvantageous because it's so much of an outlier. It makes it harder for you to build a team that can win on the road and at home. And so that's what they'll look at. Now, the first thing is they're going to take the bullpens off the field. They're pretty much resolved, I think, to do that. And it's a matter of where they put them. Now, I think they could take out the center field bleachers between the Kale Garden and the arcade and maybe build like a little grassy berm or something out there, and then you terrace the two bullpens down, and maybe you put it in a way that it carves out a small chunk of Triples Alley. I don't think you're going to see them like take out a wide swath because they don't want to take out too much and all of a sudden, boom, the park is playing in a way that they didn't intend and there's nothing they can do about it. I mean, I think they're going to do what teams like the Mets and the Padres have done, where the Mets played 3 years at Citi Field with 405 feet out to right center. And after 3 years, they moved it to 395 and they played three more years. They gathered more data. They decided, okay, yeah, it's still too big, and now it's at 385. It's very incremental, and I think that's what the Giants will do. If they do tweak the dimensions, I think it's going to be some small things here and there. And I don't think the character of the park is going to change. I don't think it's going to become a bandbox because it's usually cold there. Temperature is the number one thing that controls ball flight, as you know, Sarah and I have figured out. So, I don't think the park is going to be completely different. So don't be up in arms saying, oh, gosh, the ballpark is not going to be any recognizable to what we know and love. That's not the case. But I do think that they will look at some ways that they can tweak it as they look at where they can move those bullpens.
All right. I agree with you. Something is going to happen with the bullpens, and I think they're going to figure out something in the outfield. I agree with that. Andy Baggerly with us from the Athletic Extra Bags on Twitter. Andy, Beattie on Friday night was absolutely terrific. He built on the Dodger shutout of five innings and went deeper in this one against the Marlins. Granted, they're the worst hitting team in baseball, but you think Beattie's turned the corner a little bit? What's your take on Beattie's couple of games?
Well, I think when your issue is consistency, when your issue is command, I think you've got to have a pretty thick sample of really good quality starts before you can start to think that somebody's turned that corner. And, you know, there have been a lot of pitchers, Corey Kluber or Kevin Brown, or you go down the list of guys who, you know, Bobby Witt, he issued a lot of walks early in his career. And you know, that's something that you have to harness and get better at. And the more you're in the big leagues, the more you kind of fine-tune and learn how to do that. So, you know, I don't think that two starts or three starts is going to be the point where Tyler Beattie turns the corner. I think it's having maybe two good months in a row where you can start to say, okay, now this guy's really figured out how to minimize mistakes and pitch, you know, from pitch one to 100 in a game and really not leave hitters with a whole lot of mistakes to pounce on. So, but everything's encouraging, of course, and I think there's a reason, as Grant Grisby wrote on The Athletic, a really good piece, why they haven't taken a Sean Anderson route yet with Tyler Beattie. You watch him pitch against the Marlins, you see those, you know, four-plus pitches he can throw, and you realize, you know, you see his stuff is maintained from start to start. The guy's never had an arm issue, he's never been on the DL. Health, projectable body, still throwing at the same velo in the fifth inning as he is in the first. These are all great traits of a very good starting pitcher, and I think that the Giants are going to be really, really slow to discard any of that just because he's having trouble throwing strikes from time to time.
Well, he got two good games, and he looks comfortable out there. So, and plus, one was against the Dodgers, too. So I'm open to see more. And Anderson, I love in the bullpen. I think he's been a closer at Florida, and I think that's made for him. So we'll see where that ends up. Andy Bagley with us. Andy, thinking about Bumgarner, of course, he pitches on Saturday. Next start should be next week sometime. I think he's set up. I think he's set up to pitch the last game against the Dodgers, which would be appropriate, wouldn't it?
Oh, I think so. That's my expectation all along, is that Bochy would hand the ball to Bumgarner for his last game. I mean, those guys are just, you know, they're so linked in Giants history and the history of their careers and their success. So I think that's appropriate.
All right. The future of this team is in Farhan's hands, so to speak. What's his agenda? What do you think? What's the first thing he does here? You know, we're at the end of the season. There's always exit interviews and, you know, assessments of what the season looks like anyway. What's on Farhan's agenda? What do you think's coming up?
Well, I think they're probably going to make some changes in their amateur scouting ranks, as they've already done with their pro scouting ranks. They laid off, eight people with a combined 140 plus years who've worked for the Giants organization, not just in baseball, but for the Giants. And I think there's another retirement or two expected, and they will replace some of those scouts, but, you know, they're definitely changing and doing less major league scouting in terms of having people on the road and in ballparks, and they're doing more of scouting at, you know, the Dominican Summer League and the lower levels, et cetera. So, you know, they're redeploying some of the resources there, and some of the changes reflect that. And I think that you're going to see some changes at the player development side, and then some coaching changes. And you're going to see, obviously, the major league staff is going to be very different under a new manager. I think after they maybe let go of maybe some other scouts or some other personnel that they decided to move on from, obviously one of the first things I think you're going to see is Farhan look to hire a GM. He definitely has, I think, some specific people in mind, and he's going to try to get him. If he can't get him, he'll leave that job open. But that, I think, would be the first thing, because, you know, that whoever you hire for that GM position is going to, you know, be a big voice in the room for who they decide is the right fit to manage the team, because the new GM is going to work even more closely with the manager day-to-day than Farhan will, because that's the person who really manages the ins and outs of the roster needs from day-to-day. So that's probably the first thing, and then from there, obviously, you'll have the manager search, and they're going to go really wide and interview a lot of candidates, and I don't expect they're going to make a hire until, you know, maybe even mid-November. So and then after that, you've got, you know, free agency and everything else. So a lot on his plate, probably a lot more to do this offseason than last year, where he basically had, you know, what was left in the cupboard to try to, you know, bake a cake, and now he can almost pick some of his ingredients. So I think there's going to be a lot more on Farhan's plate now than there was last offseason.
Well, a lot of interesting things coming up. As you were talking, I was thinking about it. You go through this every year if they want to hire someone whose team is in the playoffs. And, of course, that always means Houston and maybe even the A's if Billy Owens is in the mix. It really puts a halt kind of to getting somebody, which stops the manager and all the other stuff that goes on. I guess that's something he's going to have to deal with.
Well, yeah, and I don't think that that's a big problem. I think they realize that if it's someone they want and they're going to have to wait to get them, then they'll wait. And, you know, it's only a problem if they want to hire somebody. They're looking at somebody else who's not on a contender, and that person's a candidate for a job somewhere else, and then maybe the timing doesn't work out and you lose them. But I think they're going to wait to get the person that they want and make sure that they can interview everybody they want and hear a range of perspectives. There's a lot of information that you can gain from going through this process, and I think they realize they can benefit from that. And they're going to be open-minded, too. I think it's not going to be a situation where they have their sort of leader in the clubhouse and then everything else is going to be for show. I think they're going to really listen and engage with everyone that they bring in. And I think it's going to be a big list. I think it's going to be more than 10 people. So, you know, Dave Roberts was not what they thought would be the first choice in L.A. when Farhan was the GM there and Dave Roberts was hired. So I think that's a good template for who I think they're going to look at. Someone who's relentlessly optimistic, someone who can get buy-in from players, who maybe necessarily isn't the guy who's going to manage a game, but is going to really manage people well.
Boy, interesting. Boy, good stories coming up, I will tell you that. It's a pleasure to have you on, Andy Bagley, The Athletic, Extra Bags on Twitter with two Gs. Andy, thanks so much for stopping by, and We'll catch up with you that next weekend. Boy, the home weekend is going to be something else with Colorado during the weekend. That last three games with the Willie Mack Award, Bochy's last three games. I'm not sure that we've seen anything quite emotional. Maybe, well, we didn't see a World Series win here. This may be the most emotional we're going to see.
Yeah. Well, I'll see you there, Marty.
All right. That is Andy Bagley. Andy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, more coming up, KMBR 104.5 and 680, right here on the Sports Leader.